Hello, my fantastic radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I'm your host, DJ Warm and Nurturing, and tonight we have an unprecedented event in the history of the Sex Talk program. I have in this room more living, sexually active males than I have ever gathered in one place, except, of course, the trip to the arena 2 years ago, which I'm still paying off my credit card.
It's just like Jesus with the loaves and the fishes, right?
Exactly. Normally, I play the loaf role, but tonight I want to try being more of a fish.
It's amazing there's room for all of us in the hot tub.
So I was wondering whether that was the automatic hot tub cleaning snake or something else. Tonight what we're going to talk about tonight is two things, actually. First of all, I'm going to talk about a personal emotional epiphany that I had earlier in the steam room. And second, we are going to talk about the effect and impact. we didn't exchange names. The impact of homosexuality in the American media.
Featuring a detailed account of our field trip to England.
Exactly.
Which we'll get to in a second. But before we delve into your personal epiphany, let's let our listeners know how they can call us to share their own personal epiphanies.
You know, I'm not even sure I remember. I'm so overwhelmed by my own emotional breakthroughs. You know, as they say, before every breakthrough, Lance, there's a breakdown.
I don't. Did you hear that on Car Talk? Anyways, listeners, if you want to give us a call, you can reach us at 621-9728. Or if you're on the car.
Wait. I'm sorry.
Did you have to negotiate what was the phone company for that number?
Did you say 621-9728?
But of course. What else could I have said?
Sorry, I think I misheard. Oh, if you're on campus, you can dial 268-9728 as well. Yeah. Interesting.
But back to you, DJ Warman Nurturing.
So the epiphany that I had was, you know, as you know, last week I was playing the role of DJ Badass because I was under the impression that I had concluded that the reason people are frightened of me is because I'm so badass. Like I'm too damn tough for them to actually. They're afraid of me. They're afraid to interact with me.
So are you going for the gentler image today and not wearing the spiked leather codpiece?
Well, exactly. Well, I still have the electric anal probe, but I've reversed the voltages. So now it's a cathode rather than an anode, if you appreciate my electrical engineering terminology.
I appreciate it. I'm just wondering if our target audience really appreciates the warm feelings they should associate with anodes.
So I'm going to let you, Lance, lead the... So, the point is that warm and nurturing, that's what it's all about. I care about people and interacting with them.
In the steam room, perhaps?
Wherever I find them. In the steam room, in the swimming pool, in the...
locker room?
I guess steam room and locker room pretty much cover it.
Terminal
I guess.
Room? Ween Hall elevator?
Gladiator arena. You know, wherever I find them.
So, this is your personal epiphany, the fact that you're going to try to be a kinder, gentler talk show host and not run roughshod.
Sure. When people see me on the street, I want them to say, I want to know him. I want to get to understand his feelings better.
You don't want them to say, I want to fear him?
Well, that's what I was doing last week, and it wasn't really working.
Perhaps.
You mean know in a biblical sense?
Maybe if they noticed you first.
I mean, you'd think the nimbus of electrical discharge that surrounded him at all time because of the anal stimulator would alert people to his presence. If for no other reason than their hair stand up because of the giant static electricity he draws around it. But who are we to judge?
Right. My plan is exactly right. When you'd shake hands or whatever and there'd be like that electrical shock, that shock of static electricity, they'd be like, ooh, did you feel that? Feel what? You know? It would lend an air of mystery to my persona.
So should we talk about the field trip?
Yeah.
So we all got on a – you wouldn't think we'd have the budget for this, but we got on a Lear Gulfstream to go to England for the express purpose of watching – an English TV show, which you cannot see in America.
Yes. Wait, are you saying you can see it on cable in America, surely?
I don't believe so, no. I mean...
Late night on PBS?
I think this is too risque, too daring for PBS.
Really? So this is available only in England?
I have a feeling that if you could pirate the BBC signal, you could get it here somehow. Mm. Is that... do any of our panel assembled media experts have deeper knowledge?
Well, I have the American filtered version of the BBC, and it's not available there. Oh. I'm pretty sure it has been screened in some other Commonwealth countries. I'm pretty sure, for instance,
your international media expert.
Yeah, refer to me for secrecy reasons. Just refer to me as media guide for this evening.
Now, can't we call you IME, international media expert?
If you want. That's fine, too. It's not, some sort of pseudonym is probably safest. I think, actually, it is available in some other Commonwealth countries, like South Africa, for instance. I'm not positive.
South Africa, that's, I mean, given the fact that they didn't have television until 1975, that's an interesting choice. No, I'm serious. The South African government wouldn't allow television into the country.
Well, you know, it's a whole new type of...
That's true.
Since Mandela, it's you know, moving out in all new directions.
But you claim international media expertise, and I'm assuming the international media expertise has to do with Canada.
The United States operates in its own little media vacuum. Yeah. To a certain extent, what happens in the rest of the world, there's a certain amount of cultural sharing. Yeah. But the United States is sort of in this little fortress. It's an exporter of media content, but it's not really much of an importer, considering.
Except for curling.
Is Canada actually a separate country for the purposes of this discussion?
Well, this leads up to my question. Is this show, which the show that has no name as of yet, available in Canada in any way, shape, or form?
I'm afraid I don't know one way or the other. I tend to suspect not yet, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it got screened on public television even in Canada.
Interesting.
So while the topic of the different standards of Canadian broadcasting versus American is an interesting one, which we'll get back to in a minute, we should talk about the show, which was called Queer as Folk. And it makes me wonder how could a show have such a creative and unusual name?
A moment of silence to appreciate just how unusual and creative it is.
My understanding of the title of the show is it's based on an old saying. Canadian, Irish?
No, it's some old – I think it's some old English saying, but I'm not sure if it came from a poem or not.
I can't – there's – and, I, you know, you'll help me with the accent. There's nout so queer as folk, meaning – there's nothing so strange as human beings.
It doesn't mean everyone's gay in Wales.
Right. No. It's taking an older meaning of the words and.
Right. So, for example, if you were like
current connotation.
You know, if like back in the 1500s, you're in a village and like you know you're urinating in the street and defecating, of course, and everyone's got the plague, and you know you trip over like
one wonders why
you trip over a corpse and you fall on your face. And you're like, ha, wasn't that funny? And someone else would say, well, you know, there's nout so queer as folk.
They wouldn't say, ha, you got the plague.
Except for the problem that if they had been in Wales at that time period, they wouldn't have been speaking English. But, yeah, it's definitely.
Maybe it would have been some exotic foreign language, the way teenage girls love to speak French in America. So, but back to the show. Queer as Folk is not about getting the plague in some odd slapstick way. It's actually, right, about hot gay action or the implicit promise of such.
I thought it was trying to be, you know, a serial about a bunch of people, different character types, the majority of whom happen to be sexually active and gay.
So
it happened to be wasn't an accident.
I think DJ IME's point is well taken, that it took completely conventional narrative structures, soap opera-like, but over a somewhat narrower span, and the only thing it changed about it was that every important character, or all the critical characters, and most of the supporting characters, were gay. And that alone, that juxtaposition of the two things you never see together, produced quite a wallop.
That's what I liked about it the most, was that it took a storyline that was generally used for straight shows about, mm-hmm. you know, regular characters, and just switched the roles, and then explored sort of, in a very serious way, especially towards the end, the kinds of emotional issues that gay men have to deal with. Well, not really with respect to their place in society, but sort of with respect to just themselves.
Within the lives they set up for themselves, right.
It also makes it more interesting because you have more of a combinatorial – can I say that word on the air? I don't know what the –
they probably believed it.
Regulation, more combinatorial explosion of possibilities.
Just to say combinatidial. can I say that one?
I think if you don't say big O notation, we're fine.
You're saying it was more efficient because the characters could pair off in lots of more options.
The loaves and the fish.
Nothing was off limits. Right?
At least in the first episode.
And I think you make an excellent point, both that the story did have this traditional structure and very kind of exciting soap opera feel, if you will, but it also, you know, at least at the beginning, was laden with steamy gay sex, which you don't actually see a lot of.
In fact, after watching 20 minutes of this, my first thought was, has DJ Warm and Comforting, sorry, DJ Warm and Nurturing, really tricked us into coming over to England to watch a gay porn movie?
Well, just out of curiosity, I mean, to some extent, we thought we saw a lot of stuff. But did we actually see, primary male sexual characteristics in the
We got a couple. Well, okay, so we got a couple glances of penises, but all you have to do is go watch a Ewan McGregor movie to see that, right? What I thought was new, I'd never seen a man lick another man's butt cheek in American mainstream cinema. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was an episode of Who's the Boss, I think, which had that. It was a very special.
No, that was Alyssa Milano presented as a drag king. That wasn't really a guy.
Okay. So I don't mean to, like, present a whole catalog of gay sexual positions, but
Please do.
So, there was this very, I thought, sensuous scene where the young protagonist, Nathan, is having his first sexual encounter, and this guy is kind of working his way down. He's, like, licking his neck, maybe, and working his way down his back, and he starts licking his, like, firm, tender buttock, which is very erotic.
You sound like you're on the verge of another epiphany.
This led directly to an episode of Suggested Rimming, right? The camera cut away just the moment when his partner took the plunge, and you see a beatific expression of pleasure on young Nathan's face. So there was that. There was also...
It was even better because afterwards, didn't his partner turn to him and say, they never told you about that, did they? Implying there was some exotic sexual activity implied.
Right. And for me, what he would have found was my whole, like, electronic probe apparatus, right? And, the whole 120, 212 power switch.
That's true. I never thought of that problem when you go to England, right? You have to get an inverter.
Or was it 240, yeah.
It might be a little too dangerous with the European electrical
system. It's got to be some sort of battery pack you could work out.
you might want to stay DC anyway. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And beyond that, there were less steamy, but perhaps in some sense more explicit scenes. Like, there was a scene which was clearly meant to indicate, anal penetration. One guy's sort of on his back with his legs up in the air, and the other guy's kind of on top of him. And, while you don't actually see any you're all looking at me blankly. I mean, I think this happened.
I remember thinking to myself, so that's how it works.
You actually do see genitalia in that scene.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Not mouse genitalia, though. Actual human genitalia.
Turgid, yeah. Erect penises? No.
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 No. It was sort of après sex type of equipment.
When he says après sex equipment, what does he mean? After? What does the word après mean?
I think the implication is that the time period during which there might have been a turgid member involved had passed.
Oh, interesting.
And so it said genitalia was now lounging around leisurely.
That's right. It was recovering.
The genitalia shots and the sex shots pretty much cleanly partitioned from one another. So
there was that aspect of it that was startling. I mean, one, British television, as evinced by anyone who watched Monty Python's Flying Circus as a kid and saw occasional, female nudity on PBS of all places, right, have always had different nudity standards, right?
Well, we should also mention this wasn't a BBC series, right?
Yeah, it wasn't.
No, this was the famous British Channel 4.
Right, Channel 4, which is always more leading edge and more cinematic.
Okay, I'll redact BBC and replace British television broadcasting.
But, your point is still valid, and it's still a good one. I mean, even renowned Emmy winner Helen Mirren has showed her breasts on British TV, which she would probably never do in America because she would be shunned. I don't know.
We have more taste. Well, she's been an actress for a long time. She was younger once. For a
brief moment.
Well, I mean,
I think one of her classic early roles actually was as one of the nymphs in Midsummer Night's Dream. Actually. So she probably, you probably, that's probably what you're talking about.
Well, it might be, although I thought she did it more recently for a beer commercial or something. Some kind of commercial. Look, someone out there, like, surf the web, you know, verify this for me and give us a call at 621-9728.
Maybe, but even as evidenced by, I mean, it's only been in the last couple of years that NYPD has brought us the splendor of bare buttocks on American television, right? So
in a non-sexual context, right? And I mean, I think that has to be clear. It's not clear that they would have, just because American TV is now showing some hind sides in the shower scenes or in locker rooms doesn't mean that they would allow nudity in a sexual context on public on broadcast TV, for instance.
I think NYPD Blue has shown, like,
well, I'm not
like
a regular.
They've shown, like, Dennis Franz from behind.
Yeah, you're a regular watcher. So have you seen? Right. So did you see Dennis Franz in bed with Sharon Lawrence when
America's not ready.
Was still alive?
America's not ready for that image.
In particular,
they're ready for Sharon Lawrence, though.
Yeah, well, she's not around anymore, though, right? Didn't they cut her off?
Right. But I actually don't watch the show anymore. But in the old days, I remember, what's his name? The annoying guy from L.A. Law. Yeah,
Jimmy Smith.
Oh, Jimmy Smith.
I saw him, like, you know, rolling out of bed with his annoying girlfriend and showing his butt and whatever.
Well, no, rolling out of bed is different than actually, you know, heaving too, so to speak.
Right. Well,
I mean, I think Queer as Folk featured scenes that, even in a heterosexual context, wouldn't have been shown on American television.
But titillating though this issue of nudity is, it's the gay sexual content that I think is a far more explosive issue.
I'm also curious about the fact that one of the main characters was quite young.
Hold on to that. I think we have a caller, and as DJ Warm and Nurturing never lets us forget, the callers always come first.
Hello, caller. Is the caller on the air?
The caller is on the air.
Thank you so much for calling in. Did you have a question, comment, or concern that you wanted to share with us?
I have a pretty deep concern involving the transportation that you may or may not have taken over to England, especially given the recent Kenya and Alaska Airlines crashes. I was wondering whether the Warm and Nurturing Anal Probe was actually an approved electronic portable device, and whether that has to be turned off during takeoff and landing.
I think they route the airplane's electrical systems through the probe and use Corey as a monitoring device.
That's a good question. They made me turn off my laptop. That's a good question. They made me turn off my laptop. Did they make you turn off the...
Interesting. Well, actually, they it's funny because they want you to turn off all your portable electronic devices, but they really have no ability to check this kind of thing. Right. So as a courtesy, I reduced the vibration to a low hum just to keep myself stimulated but not necessarily fully aroused during the flight, and I felt that was a good compromise between safety and my own sensual pleasure.
Okay. Well, it just as a concerned airline traveler, I would hope that you're aware of the potential dangers in electrostatic fields causing interruption, potentially.
I appreciate your point, and of course, you know, I'm as concerned with the lives of those around me as I am about myself, but that has to be balanced against my own need for pleasure, which I don't think should be discounted.
And that could be dangerous, too, for the rest of the people on the flight.
Just so there's no misunderstanding, we certainly made sure that our esteemed host took an earlier flight to minimize our interaction with his systems.
That was really my only concern, so... you put my fears sort of to rest.
Well,
we could be of service.
Let me probe you with a question, if I may.
Okay.
Have you been listening to the show so far?
Yes, listening to the whole thing.
Are you intrigued by this? Have you heard about this British series, Queer as Folk? Are you intrigued by it? And are you intrigued by the possibility that it might be brought to America by Batman creator Joel Schumacher?
wow.
And if you think I'm making that up, you're mistaken.
Is this going to be back-to-back with Felicity?
It's going to be on Showtime.
When you say back-to-back with Felicity,
that's a separate show.
Although if it were going to appear on network TV, I bet it would be the edgy WB that would bring it to you, as opposed to, say,
unless
CBS.
Unless there are not a plethora of Afro-American characters, I would assume that the WB probably wouldn't have much interest in caring. I am very intrigued, and certainly... wanton with desire to see a show like this brought to the States. Although I really would rather just see, I don't want to see it watered down, you know, kind of like those rated R gay films you can rent. You know, I mean, there's really never any substance to those. I mean, if you're going to go all the way kind of thing. I mean, is that what you're saying this sort of is, or is it really kind of softcore?
Well, I think the point is that it's really mostly a soap opera, but it just happens to turn up the kind of steamy sex knob more than your average. It's more like an edgy HBO drama in terms of its sexual.
NC-17?
No, if it were about straight people,
right? What would it be?
Would be PG between a PG-13 and an R.
Okay.
Depending on how they handled like female upper body nudity.
Right. Well, and the underage condition of one of the main characters.
That would be an issue.
That's true. That would be an issue.
Okay. I'd probably watch it, but I'd probably be frustrated if I didn't see enough. Mm.
What if you saw a live stage production with me as all of the characters?
No, there are a number of scenes that makes it difficult for me to imagine. Well, the three-way, especially.
You're not taking into account...
Would that be like a musical called Hairless or something?
No, I don't think you're taking into account D.J. Norman Comforting's consummate acting ability.
That's true.
Patrick
Stewart can do Christmas Carol all by himself.
But there wasn't a three-way in the Christmas Carol.
Well, but there is that whole dinner. There is that dinner, you know, where Bob Cratchit and Tiny Tim and presumably Mrs. Cratchit and the other members of the family are all there, and Patrick Stewart plays every role.
That's true, and that's sort of a gustatory eight-way in a sense, right?
The thought of Warm and Comforting in all of those positions is a bit overwhelming.
Warm and Comforting, I would say.
So, Carl, can we do anything else for you?
No, that's quite all right. Just looking out for my fellow airline travelers and definitely looking for the show.
Well, thank you so much, caller, for calling in. And if anyone else wants to share their thoughts, comments, or concerns, please give us a call at 621-9728. I should mention we also have a website, sextalk.wrct.org.
I have a concern. What if someone actually dials sort of the numbers spelled out by the letters sex, 2-1, et cetera? I just want to know if somebody can investigate that for us and find out who.
No, we already figured out you get the Duquesne University choir.
Oh, I'm so
well, then it's okay.
These are the castrates, right, at Duquesne?
I guess so.
Can we get the Duquesne University choir to please call in also?
So, but back to this intriguing notion of Batman Forever director Joel Schumacher bringing this to perhaps our international media expert should talk about this. He would remake the series then?
That's what I've heard. But of course, every Hollywood deal, you know, every rumor is you can't believe any rumor until you actually, you know.
So you're saying
something on paper.
There's a chance it'll be directed by Francis Ford Coppola instead?
Yeah, I consider that a possibility. But no, I mean, we don't even know if the property is going to be produced yet. When they start, then I'll start believing it. But yeah, it does seem that they're not content to actually show the original classic. They want to remake it for American sensibilities and American cultural prejudices.
I'm surprised anybody's considering making this at all for an American audience. It doesn't seem like there's going to be an audience for something like
that. Well, remember,
I mean, I'm surprised even in Europe that there was really an audience for something like this.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's controversial, right? I mean, that breeds its own audience for no other reason than just because of that, right?
I'm not a regular watcher, but isn't Time Warner's series on HBO Oz feature homosexual acts every once in a while?
Well, sure, in prison.
Or implied. No, but I'm just saying, to what extent, how explicit is Oz?
Oh, it's extremely, I mean, so, you know, if you watch an episode of Oz and you don't see, you know, a prison anal rape or someone thrown into solitary completely naked, you must have blinked because...
You've been watching the wrong show.
Okay, and this is the largest media conglomerate in the world producing this and doesn't feel threatened by it. So if the number two company, Viacom...
But there's an issue of context there, right?
I haven't seen the show, but to me it sounds a lot like Will and Grace, where they say, oh, those homosexuals, aren't they a funny bunch? But it's not really about, you know, Will's trials in life or Jack's trials in life. I mean, Jack is just comedy sugar on top of everything else, whereas Queer as Folk is really an exploration of the real lives of these three gay men. And I don't think that there's much interest getting into the minds and the real lives of the people.
Well, one can make the argument that a good story about good characters is a good story about good characters, whether or not they like men, or you know,
one can argue that, but in America, people just
well. So I think that's probably why they probably need to Americanize it. There'll probably be a few episodes early on that get people into it. They probably think running the actual British series probably wouldn't work.
Do you think they'll make one of the characters an American football player?
Billy Beane.
I mean, and also they probably aren't happy with just 8 episodes. They probably want to do the full. What is the season of these series? 13, 26?
On HBO, it's 20. On premium cable, it's 13 usually. On network TV, it's 22.
Right. So this is Viacom Showtime pay TV channel, right?
Well, given the amount of commercials they put in these shows, it's probably enough material in the 8 half-hour episodes that we saw.
Although, there's a point. If it was on premium cable like Showtime, there wouldn't be any commercials. Although even they usually do 22-minute episodes, the same as – so when you see it half an hour sitcom on TV, it's really 22 minutes of material and then 8 minutes of commercials. And so when HBO does sitcoms like The Larry Sanders Show, it does 22-minute episodes, so to preserve syndication rights later.
I see.
Syndication possibilities later. So, I mean, who knows what they do. But the idea is European TV, British TV, seems to be happy to make sort of one-off series that only run for 8, you know, episodes, whatever. Absolutely Fabulous had a total run of, what, like 15?
Well, I think it was four. Each series was 6, and okay. I think there were only 3 or 4 yeah. series plus the TV movie.
Whereas in America, that would be nothing, right? America has to beat a series into the ground over 8 years, right?
Right. Well, on the networks anyway. Yeah. But I think that format could work. But they probably need to Americanize the content. Also, they speak a funny language, right? I mean, they're not speaking, you know, mainstream American English. The series is set in Manchester, I believe. Right.
Yes,
so they do have a regional accent that Americans may not be Americans may not be familiar with.
Oh, but that's easy. They just dub. I mean,
like they did with the Mad Max movie.
Well,
one of the biggest
dub-
insults to
they dubbed the Mad Max.
The first Mad Max movie, if you rent it in this country,
really?
Is dubbed. Yeah, the Australian was just, you know, the Australian was just too.
But then again,
too heavy.
They dubbed Annie McDowell and Tarzan.
So I mean, my primary concern. You know, for the American audience, is that because there's going to be this remake, that they may never get to see the inspiration for such an action, right? Just like you don't get to see the original Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, here.
Or the original Man with One Red Shoe starring Tom.
Oh, you're talking about Un Homme avec une Chaussure Noire. You can probably rent it. It's much much funnier than the Tom Hanks remake, definitely.
Well, is that a bad thing that they're gonna Americanize it? I mean, that you won't see the original?
There are two things. Right? There's Americanizing it by essentially making it the same series but with American football players and lots of apple pie. And then there's Americanize it in the sense of, like, all the bad things that sort of American TV can do with a good idea. You know, in the same sense that when American TV wanted to make an American version of Fawlty Towers, right, it wasn't any good at all. Right? You know, there just seems to be this, like, giant sucking mud-like force.
On the other hand, such classics as Three's Company came over from Britain quite easy, and Ropers came over from Britain and worked quite well.
That is true. Although I don't think they worked because they were mimicking the British series so much as because they found their own voice.
So what do you mean by your various comments about Americanization? I mean, to me, Americanizing this show means sort of cutting out the layers below the surface where there was actually meaning and interesting development going on.
I'll say there's the Americanization A, where you just change the accents and make people football players, and Americanization B, where you just make it crappy, like they did when they remade Fawlty Towers.
I don't think they're intentionally trying to make it crappy. I just think they can't help it.
Yeah.
No, I think it is intentional. It's trying to make something more general appeal, right? And less, if it's less complicated, right, more people understand it. And because there's no expectation for sophistication, it just, you know, it works.
And yeah. I think the most insidious example of this is Americanization B1 is when you kind of apply the sort of episodic stamp where, you know, before the first commercial there's a conflict and you know, it gets worked out.
Yeah,
act one.
Has to be resolved. You're talking about the standard 3-act formula. Sure.
Yeah. Right. And then there's a moral right at the end and a little
I mean, this is a murky question because when people talk about series that are on, for example, premium cable, like some of the stuff HBO has produced, like The Sopranos and Oz and Larry Sanders, which really seem to be the visions of their creators and be more or less uncompromised, right? That's very different than what happens on networks where the entire process seems to be polluted and that anything of quality that pops up seems to be sort of a bizarre accident.
Yeah, you know, I think
inspired by radiation much.
Yeah, I think the pay TV series is actually more have a lot more in common with the way television production works in the rest of the world.
Because they're not forced to pander for ratings. They're allowed a little more freedom.
For instance, on The Sopranos, not every episode is the exact same length. If they run out of story at 50 minutes, that's how long the episode runs.
So just to bring this back to Queer as Folk, I wonder if there's an equivalent American saying that they could use for the title if they transplanted.
Well, I was going to suggest Queer as Cordell Stewart.
I'm sure there's a lawsuit.
What could that possibly
mean? I'm sure there's a lawsuit in there somewhere.
What could that possibly mean?
I'm sorry, what is the Native American saying that comes from? I don't understand.
There's
the
not as queer as
I think it's very it's a very popular saying around Pittsburgh.
But so
when the pilgrims came over, when the pilgrims came over, you know, there's a lot of disease. People were living in huts. They, you know, somebody would trip over a person with a plague and fall, and you know, they would laugh and they would say, "Well, there you go. There's not so queer as Cordell Stewart." And only coincidentally, does that have the same name as the Pittsburgh Steelers football player, which I think it's unfortunate that his parents gave him that name. Because it has this kind of negative connotation with this.
Well, it's just like me, right?
First Massachusetts gubernatorial race, right?
Well, we all know what John Thomas means in some parts of the world, right? And so,
and that's
that's close to my name.
To your name, yeah. James Lance.
Yeah.
And also when you say there's not so queer, the common saying there's not so queer as Cordell Stewart. You're not referring to. There's no one so homosexual as Cordell Stewart. There's no one who would go to the Fruit Loop as often as Cordell Stewart. What you're really saying is there's no one as strange, as funny, as wacky, and interesting as Cordell Stewart.
Okay, so...
Well, of course, but I'm sure that Mr. Stewart might find it maybe concerned that a lot of people might misinterpret this.
Yes, of course, and I'm the first to say that, you know...
Na-na-na-na-na.
There's not so queer as Cordell Stewart.
Let's make it clear that the attempt to bring over Queer as Folk to America would be through a cable network where it might legitimately... I mean, the tentative attempt right now, right?
Well, I mean, look, we heard similar rumors about Absolutely Fabulous being brought to the United States, and the rights have even been purchased, which we don't even know if that's happened
true,
with Queer as Folk, and it never materialized.
True.
We haven't heard yet. So, but I'm just wondering whether or not they'll actually ever release the series here.
But the one positive piece of evidence that I see is that Showtime is becoming like the gay network. A couple nights ago, they showed the show called Common Ground, starring hottie Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who's on that Tool show, Home Improvement.
Former Tool show.
Tool.
Right,
that
show on Disney's network, right?
And so... in the show, Jonathan Taylor Thomas plays a troubled gay teen. There's actually a bunch of characters in it, but he was the one I was.
But this was just a one-shot television movie, made for cable movie, right?
Right.
You know, that brings up a question. So, can you? I'm interested in segueing into a broader issue of the portrayal of homosexuality in the media. So, my first question is: has there ever been a portrayal of a untroubled gay teen?
would it make interesting drama? I mean, that's part of the problem, right?
Maybe. I mean, for example, Opie on it could make interesting comedy, right? For example, Opie on the Andy Taylor Show was an untroubled, straight, presumably straight.
Andy Griffith Show.
Andy Griffith Show. Yeah. So where is the gay? That's all I'm saying.
For instance, every character on a soap opera has a twin they don't know about, right? I mean, these are sort of dramatic devices that aren't true in reality.
That's very true.
No, you don't know about your twin. International media expert, so technically
that's what we could all have
separated at birth. I can't think of an untroubled gay teen, but there was an untroubled gay couple in American Beauty.
That's true.
Which was sort of strangely offset by the homicidal maniac from next door.
Yes.
Yeah. that was one.
Okay.
They weren't very well developed.
I believe our producer has something to add.
I believe that there was actually a fairly untroubled, or there is a fairly untroubled teen on that Dawson's Creek show, who is as troubled or untroubled as any of the other characters on the show.
Interesting.
We should know that who's the guy who wrote Dawson's Creek? Some guy wrote Scream. Kevin Williamson. Kevin Williamson has been out of the closet for a while, though, so it would be unsurprising for him to put a.
Didn't his last effort for WB tank?
Yes,
it did tank.
I don't remember if it had any gay themes in it, though.
I don't remember either.
Maybe it was a bunch. It was a bunch of men and women in their 20s in New York City. So I'm betting dollars to donuts it did.
So I think I have two responses. I mean, I think, you know, I think in reality, it's more likely to find. So in TV dramas, you can actually point to another. A number of untroubled gay adults, right? But I think both in reality and on sitcoms.
that's a nice combination.
and in TV dramas, I mean, I think that if you're gay or going to be gay, the time when you're most likely to be troubled is when you're a teenager. I mean, that's when you're actually first coping with your homosexual issues. And so I think it's an almost irresistible plot device. I mean, it would be a little bit unbelievable to have, like, a super teen who was totally comfortable with his homosexuality. However, I was going to say, A Party of Five's Wilson Cruz, who is gay in real life and has played at least one gay role on the now tragically canceled My So-Called Life. I think he's gay on Party of Five. If not, sorry, Wilson.
He is now.
He's their little housekeeper slash nanny.
But there's some sort of a stereotype at play here, right, that, you know, being gay is something to be troubled about, right? And therefore, it becomes a plot device.
Well, I don't think it's so much that being gay is being something to be troubled about, but that it's hard being a teen, and it's even harder when half the school wants to beat the crap out of you as well, right?
Well, I'm not sure there are any TV shows about even straight teens who aren't troubled to some extent or have some kind of a problem. I mean, it's not an interesting show unless somebody has a problem.
Yeah, look at Freaks and Geeks.
True.
Yeah, but what about Urkel? Was he trouble on Family Matters?
Deep. I'd like to make one point about Wilson Cruz is that he stars in the soon-to-be-out-of-theater Supernova as a computosexual.
Is that actually still playing? Hasn't it been out for like 2 or 3 weeks now? It lasted until Thursday.
I saw it this past Friday, so it's still playing.
Lance, what was that word?
Computosexual. There's a plot device where he's in love with his computer.
Ah,
there's no actual physical consummation of the act, but
does the computer have an assigned gender?
Because it's an American television show. Because it's an American television show.
Well, it's an American movie. Yeah, no. The computer does not have an assigned gender, but it has a very sexy female voice. So there's an implicitly assigned gender.
Right. That was a novelty invented. Well, I don't know if it was invented, but it was certainly popularized by Star Trek. Yeah.
Well, back to the idea of gays portrayed in the American media. I think it's actually pretty fantastic and very surprising to me that there are so many examples of gay men and even gay teens to be talked about in the media these days.
Let's take the example of Will and Grace, which is actually getting acclaim as a solid, funny sitcom. It was three of the cast members nominated for Golden Globes, which is more than any other sitcom in the country. How do you think that's? I mean, again, a sitcom where it's not really – I mean, it's just trying to be funny. It's just trying to be a sitcom, and the characters sort of happen to be gay, right? It's not about being gay in the same way that English classic Queer or Folk was. I was wondering if you thought about that.
I think it's great. I mean, I don't think that they're taking being gay as something that they're railroading and denigrating in any way. They just use it as the next available – you know, humor situation, and they're milking it for the humor that's implicit in gay stereotypes and gay life. And it's refreshing.
It's kind of normalcy and acceptance almost.
They're not treating it as something that's to be sort of depressed about. I mean, Will is certainly very happy, and Jack is very neurotic. And it's two different sides of life, I guess.
Are there more gays than African Americans on network television in this country?
Good question.
Not if you count UPN.
So, Stephen Leclerc, you're grimacing. Is there a comment bubbling up to the surface that you're...
That Will of Will and Grace struck me as about the least gay man I've seen on television. They had a recent episode where they were talking about him donating sperm for a child, and... Originally, it was for one of his friends, not Grace, but in the end, he reserved his sperm for Grace, and this struck me as very
sweet. Is there a card for that?
Heterosexual comment or
a shoebox greeting?
I think there is.
Happy Valentine's Day. I've reserved my sperm for you.
So
you take issue with that, or what's your point?
Well, I mean, it's. that's a heterosexual relationship they're sort of portraying there for a gay character. Put gay in quotes.
Well, as either a, sort of a corollary to a comment or a follow-up, I should say that this show would be – this show lives and dies by its two supporting characters, Jack and what's her name? I mean, the main characters are I think, completely bland, terribly boring, and not particularly good actors. And so, you know, while it's true –
Despite that, their Golden Globe nominations.
Did the main –
Both of the main characters got nominated.
Really?
Jack, yeah, and Sean Hayes.
Because I watch it for Sean Hayes and the secretary,
Megan Mullally,
who I think are fantastic and have me, you know, gripping my stomach in pain because they're so funny. But if the show were just those two main characters, I don't think.
I certainly wouldn't watch it.
No. But the sperm issue, it seems like.
They've
as much
shown
as we like to talk about sperm.
They've shown Will kissing Grace more times than they've shown Will kissing a guy. I mean, it's pretty clear that. While he is supposedly gay, they aren't really portraying the character as a truly gay character. They're kind of avoiding the thought that, oh my, he's actually really gay.
But I mean, they
never does get a date.
They have to try to find. I mean, no, that's not true. He does actually occasionally have dates, and he does occasionally. There have been men that have slept over on the show. But they're treading a fine line because, I mean, I think they don't want to make the mistake they perceive that Ellen made by throwing it in the face of the American public, right? And I think to do that, they have to step back a little bit from the sort of sexual comedy that you would find on, say, Friends or something else. Right? I mean, I think they do have to downplay it partially because they are blazing a trail.
Well, and I think that the fact that they do downplay it is a good sign in some ways. I mean, not in the sense that they're watering down Will's gayness, but in the sense that he is gay and it's just sort of part of who he is. And if that's not where the comedy is, then they don't focus on it. And I don't mind that, actually. I think it is sort of making being gay not such a horrific thing to talk about and that you have to focus on it every second of every show.
I mean, I can imagine it's sort of almost a classic style bickering romantic comedy about, you know, gay men. But that's something I just don't think that, you know, is going to win over the American viewing public at this point.
Right.
But back to sperm. So if I were an unmarried woman, I would like to think that my co-host, DJ Warm, nurturing sperm provider, would set aside, you know, a little bit of sperm for me.
Hasn't he already?
Well, you know, I mean,
you don't have yours yet.
Yeah, it's not really going to do me any good.
You know, I was going to do laundry tonight, but I can actually give you the rag.
That's true. Well, I'll get a little Pepsi can and put some tape on it. And, So I know what's in there when I put it in the fridge.
As a touching personal moment,
that's right.
Touching personal memento. I was actually asked at one point in my past to if I would want to be a sperm donor for one of my female friends, and you know it raises issues. I don't want to choke up here, but you know you really. You know, even though I normally would masturbate multiple times a day, the idea that I would actually be creating, you know, a child.
It wasn't the fact that it would be too much of an effort to aim a small cup.
They had this issue on Queer as Folk as well, and I didn't actually get why they brought that in there, although I guess it worked to sort of flesh out things in the show. But Stuart, I guess, was his name, had fathered a child by some lesbian.
True. Again, I mean, I think dramatically, right, that broadens that character a lot because one of the big – I mean, the show is about him as much as it's about anybody else. And one of the big themes was his selfishness versus responsibility because he's a very selfish character. And then – but he has this child, which he sort of blows off in the beginning. And there's a lot of tension created by that. And so I
have a question. I was – you know, I flew on the plane and I was there for the viewing, but it was not clear to me that it was fathered by artificial insemination. Was there any indication to the more seasoned viewers?
I mean, they didn't walk around holding.
It was the other way around.
Yeah, that was the impression that I got initially. Okay.
That it was
that they had had
done
sex.
The old-fashioned way.
But I mean,
sure
it often takes
about
it often
the most
takes
expensive wank that he had ever had. So
To me, wank implies you know implies masturbation instead of actual.
Yeah,
right.
So that's
so he's agreeing.
But I mean, actual sex can take. You know, dozens of times before conception is reached, right? And I can imagine that character saying, oh, again, you know.
Like, yeah, that's true. He hasn't done anybody twice.
Again, and with the same woman over and over again.
I mean, it's not like they were actually walking around holding a turkey baster in their hands. It's sort of symbolic. But, you know, I don't know either. I think it was just supposed to be assumed, but I don't know. Now that I think back on it, I can't think of a specific statement or act or, you know, part of the thing that makes
me either. And I also think that the fact that Queer as Folk had a gay man with a child and that Will and Grace had Will talking about having a child also legitimizes being gay in terms of starting a family. It's letting the public know that gay men also think about having families and that, you know, the gay lifestyle isn't the stereotypical one that Stuart portrays in this in Queer as Folk as, you know, having sex every night of the week with somebody different.
True. Yeah, ironically, Stuart was the one that actually fathered the kid in Queer as Folk.
Yeah.
True, although in both cases it is sort of, I mean, the men sort of play ancillary roles where the family's really, you know, it's really the woman's baby and the man plays the role of sort of a happy uncle.
They left the father blank on the birth certificate that was raised in the series.
Yes.
Yeah. True.
So I think the issue of two men actually raising a child themselves, a long-term committed gay couple, that's much, again, that's going to be a harder
net. It's not unheard of, though.
It's not unheard of. I'm just saying that in the popular media, that's going to be a harder idea to swallow.
Yeah, it'll be a harder idea to swallow. There was a movie that did that. I forget. Oh, I wish I could remember the name. Two men adopted a troubled teen, actually, who was gay.
Was he a troubled gay teen?
He was a troubled gay teen.
Aren't they all?
And I don't know if anybody here has seen it, but maybe I'll jog your memory. It was some drag singer with a really low, raspy voice.
No, that was part of – right. It was part of
– what was that?
You're not talking about The Birdcage, are you?
No.
Okay.
Oh, there was that one,
well,
too.
Although it wasn't adopted. The man had his son with this woman.
Oh, right.
But then he came
out
of closet.
And he wasn't troubled gay either.
This was a scene in this was the guy. What's the guy's name? He's like – the famous line is, you know, I just want to be loved. Is that so wrong?
Yes,
that was in Torch Song Trilogy.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
Also, the fabulous flu-infested Dan Savage has written a book about adopting
a kid. Yeah.
So I just want to interject. We might have a call, but if you're suppressing your thoughts because you don't know our phone number, it's 621-9728. What?
Rejection.
No?
Should we change the phone number to just Gay Dad?
It might get a separate audience.
Oh, I guess we need one more letter.
Gay Dad.
Gay for Dad.
Well, and, you know, drama has this, like, chilling parallel to real life because, you know, these two rich British millionaires just had a child created by, what, artificial insemination or something? Some American
surrogate
woman?
Mother in the United States, mother, which is what caused the legal problem.
And your so-called, you know, liberal English government, I think, finally decided to let the child stay permanently in the country but did not grant it citizenship.
They granted it right of abode. And they'll have to be hearing when it enters the age of majority. Yes, I think the problem was the surrogateness of it, not necessarily
that
they weren't recognizing the adoption. But I could be wrong.
Was there a fabulous genetic manipulation? What was the?
Yeah, I believe that they tried to ensure that the baby turned out gay by selectively altering its chromosomes. Well, I'm not sure. That's just a rumor.
That wasn't actually my question. I meant
they also turned off
the DNA. Was the DNA from the two sort of male parents?
No, it's not.
Okay,
it wasn't.
I thought it was a surrogate mother's egg.
Right, but the sperm, they might have mixed their sperm.
No, I think they do know who the father is, but they're not telling.
I mean, it's not implausible, right, that at some point in the far future.
Yes. If you want other real life things, there's the disclosure of what's his name. Fathering.
Oh, Melissa Etheridge.
Melissa Etheridge and
David Crosby.
Her partner's
Cipher
babies.
Julie Cipher.
Yeah.
So some of these are already starting to enter the mainstream.
Right? True, although people did question why you would want David Crosby, right? No, an alcoholic.
Well, but he definitely has some talent.
That is true. There's no question about that.
I mean, do you think that just in a drunken moment, you know, David Crosby and Melissa Etheridge were just toking it up on the beach and decided to just do the nasty?
David Crosby just showing up under the window naked saying, I'm ready. I've got your baby right here.
What a horrible thought.
Oh, God.
The question about whether or not there are more gay characters versus African-American characters in the movie is interesting, because I bet there are more gay characters than Hispanic characters in network television, actually.
Even after Everybody Loves Raymond?
Well, it's only one side of the family, right?
I don't know. Wait,
who's Hispanic on every of those women?
He is.
Ray Romano. I thought he was Italian.
Yeah, he's.
That's a good question, actually. So, what is the ethnicity of the characters?
Chico and the Man's been out there for far too long, right?
I don't watch anything on that network, actually. There's nothing I watch on that network. That seems to be part of the Viacom
that's
empire.
That's so unlikely. There's a network that you don't watch any show on?
Must our show degenerate into petty bickering when we're discussing such a noble issue as the portrayal of gays in the media? So how do people think things have changed since the days of Jack Tripper?
I put Love Sydney. That might be a better one.
What's Love Sydney?
It was the short-lived Tony Randall series where he played a housekeeper or a butler who was a mature gay gentleman. That was the
really. That's quite a stretch for him.
I believe it lasted. I think it lasted. You know, half a season. That long.
I remember the series, but I don't think I ever watched it because I was too much in denial.
Was it like a hip gay Mr. Belvedere?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, he wasn't sexually active. It was just, you know, part of the character description.
Was Mr. Belvedere sexually active?
Yeah, the contrast of that kind of implies.
Once again, I'm not all that familiar
with... You call yourself an international media expert.
There was the forbidden Mr. Belvedere's diaries.
Well, yeah, and I have a certain shortcoming to certain types of formulaic American productions, yeah.
Certainly when I was growing up, gay was not part of my vocabulary. I didn't know anybody could name any characters that were gay. If Jack was gay, it was totally lost on me. Jack Tripper.
That was the whole situation.
That was the show.
He wasn't actually gay. He was pretending to be gay to, right? That was the whole weirdness.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
I didn't pick up on that until after the show ended. So.
But no, you're
no, actually, no, but it was actually...
He wasn't actually gay.
Right. He wasn't. And... So the fact that I even forgot that, I mean, at the time, yeah, I was aware that he was pretending.
Yeah.
But, of course, he was only pretending because, of course, my God, who would want to actually be that way at that time?
No, he was pretending so we can live in that wonderful...
But a lot of the humor in that show derived out of, like, the way he would back off, like, as soon as he stopped pretending, right?
And the fact that he was pretending was a nod to the fact that you only do this to get something out of it. I mean, nobody would actually want to be this way
life. I'm not terribly familiar with Robin's Nest, the British series on which it was based, whether or not the situation was exactly the same.
But my point is now I don't think that any, teenager or somebody who's 9 or 10 years old and watches TV cannot be aware of the existence of gay men.
Although, who knows what parental lock and the V-chip. Maybe if the moral majority takes over, they'll be able to make a G-chip.
Well, certainly if parents are restricting kids' access to TV, then, you know, they could come out as fundamentally conservative as the rest of us.
A gay character yet?
What's that?
Has Sesame Street introduced a gay character yet? That would be the real touch.
True, although Sesame Street is so pre-sexual that...
Well, Teletubbies has, so...
Maybe. But I think you're right. There are... Everywhere you look at network television, not everywhere, but it's not infrequent to find a gay character who's... respected and taken seriously, right?
And certainly look at the presidential debates this year, at least within the Democratic Party. It's all about, well, not all, but a major part of their political debate is about gay X, Y, or Z.
True. You don't want to look at what the debates have been about in the Republican Party.
So I'm just wondering whether or not people think that the trip was worthwhile and whether or not that idea we talked about on the plane back about going off to Japan and checking out some of the more exotic anime that you can't get in this country is a possibility.
Oh, I thought we were going to go – you were talking about a gay
Well, I was thinking
no
the gay
production.
Theme one, actually. I was thinking about that some of the tentacle sex stuff.
Oh, Erotsuki Doji.
Did you remember your haiku that you wrote? Maybe you could recite for us.
No, I
didn't know if we had such plans in the work. I didn't know. Do we have? We must have a time.
Well, it was casually. Maybe you were sleeping then. It was casually mentioned by some of us on the way back.
No, I definitely applaud. I definitely applaud that because some of that. Yeah, no, I definitely applaud that.
I hate to interrupt the proceedings, but like all good things, the show has to come to an end. It's midnight. A little bit after, this is WRCT Pittsburgh. I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank all of our callers for calling in. I thank my gigantic
Globe.
My epiphany. You know, I was going to say my gigantic penis, but in fact, I want to say
let's just play thanks to your gigantic hosting abilities.
That as well.
Thank you all for listening. Please call in. Please listen next week, same time, Tuesday at 11, and good night.
Who is it?